Well, I'm C.W. Dow, Poise of Prairie. I was born here in Poise of Prairie in 1913. Made this my home all my life, except for several years away in the Army. I was in the regular Army previous to war. I was in the PPCLI. I joined there in 1931 and was out of the regular Army for a few months when war was declared. That was my previous experience. And rather than go back to Fort Offutt Barracks where the PPCLI was, I elected to join the Winnipeg Grenadiers where I could live downtown. We were training at Minda Street Armories. And by living out like that, I could... I was a married man. I wanted to live out of barracks because I'd been too many years in Fort Offutt Barracks. And I guess I was on the first group to be sent to Jamaica.
Excuse me, what type of training did you receive while you were at Minda Armories?
Well, it was pretty well basic. It was machine gun, Vickers gun, some Lewis, and rifle, of course, and small arms. It was an infantry and machine gun unit, and that's, there wasn't too many of us that were in the regular services before, and so most of our training was basic. Although we were reasonably well trained, I'd say, for a bunch of new fellas together. So, in Jamaica, of course, another thing, our duties were so many that we didn't have much time for training. There was little bits of training going on, but there was, what would there be? There'd be the guards on internment camps and numerous duties to carry out in an imperial garrison like that we didn't have much time for training as far as handling weapons were concerned. But we spent our, approximately a year and a half down.
And you were in the military police?
For a while. I was in B Company of the Winnipeg Grenadiers, and then I was attached to Headquarters Company and with the regimental police. It wasn't a Provo Corps. We didn't have any Provo Corps with us. And yes, I was sergeant of the police there for a while and got myself in a bit of trouble and was relieved of those duties and carried on usual duties with the unit, guard duties, ship details, things like that. And I got a couple of stripes back again and came back home and went to Hong Kong from there on. Oh, we did a bit of training on the Australian ship. I think it was an Australian or New Zealand ship, Awatea. We did a bit of training on that ship, but there's nothing really you could do except, find out how a hand grenade works and, you know, small arms training you that way. While aboard ship, you're pretty cramped, and we were 22 days, I believe it was, aboard that ship.
Did you stop any place during this trip?
We stopped, I guess we stopped someplace in the Hawaiian Islands, I think that's the only stop we made.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong there, I forget. As I mentioned before, dates and names and that escaped me anyway.
Did you know where you were going at this time when you were on the ship?
No, we didn't. Every time there's a rumor, there's a foundation to them someplace or other, but we didn't really know Hong Kong. I had an idea of more of India or some such place, but for no good reason. I don't know. I never had any reason to think of Hong Kong at all. I'll tell you one thing. I have one hell of a time getting me on an island again. I'm going to have some room to move. Anyway, we got there and we did some training. Not an awful lot, really, because we didn't have too much time. Was mostly getting organized.
What did you think of Hong Kong City when you saw it? Any first impressions?
Well, it's very fascinating, but I mean, I don't know, the cleanliness of the place and things like that wasn't appealing to me. All those sand pans in the water and whatnot. We didn't have too much time. For example, we were on the mainland and Kowloon side. We didn't have too much time. We got to before we were hit, and then we were moved over onto the island. Now, we were moved over there, and we didn't know the first thing about the place. Didn't know anything about it at all.
You'd never been on the island
before? No. I'd gone across the island by ferry just for a bit of nightlife a couple of times. But I mean, didn't know the first thing about the island. That's one thing that made it pretty rough for us, not knowing anything about the place. However, when we were hit, it was a little bit of a surprise, but we had D Company back in the hills. Back in the hills there, and they were apparently doing a heck of a good job back there. But again, we weren't in a position to know what was going on.
You were on the island itself when the war broke out, weren't you?
Yes. And they'd moved us all over there except D Company. I believe it was D Company now. I'm quite sure it was D Company. But anyway, when it happened, the platoon I was with, which actually speaking was the carrier platoon, but I had to come back home here years later to get my first ride in a carrier, but that don't matter. We moved into a position at night by compass and flashlight at night, and where we found ourselves in the morning was Jardine's lookout, and that's where there was a lot of things happening right at daybreak. Bang, we got it good. And our platoon commander, Lieutenant Burkett, he's a mighty fine man, but he got himself killed there, you know. And us not even knowing where Jardine's was, it was a pretty mixed up affair. And we were getting a lot of flak from different directions and so on. We lost a lot of good boys there, and so on. And unfortunately, we did have some that were trained for other things rather than small arms combat, as far as that goes.
Was this a whole regiment, or was this just one platoon?
It was a platoon. Yeah. The carrier platoon of B Company. Oh, no, I'm trying to think now. Wasn't that carrier platoon attached to headquarters? Okay, I got that mixed up. I don't know, but it was the carrier platoon, and Lieutenant Burkett was our platoon commander. And Sergeant Marsh was there. Corporal Geeky was killed. Sergeant Marsh was wounded. We lost quite a few. It was pretty nasty.
Was this early in the war?
It was bang right at the start. This one they made the landing, you see. Mm-hmm. And we got off Jardine's lookout. One thing that seemed funny, when a group of us were getting off there, were taking one man that was wounded down with us to a hospital. Well, we didn't know where the hospital was, but we were taking him down there anyway. We came across an Imperial unit. Were they the Royal Scots or some Imperial unit anyway? And we had a talk with them, and they said that's fine, they were going up and fix them, but they didn't stay there too long either, so we don't have to be a bit ashamed of our little effort on that deal. But anyway, we got this fellow to hospital.
And you remember what hospital it was?
No, it wasn't this Bowen Road Hospital, I know that, but anyway, we got, I had my hand broken by this time, and my left hand, the knuckles broken, and so you couldn't take arms, of course, into the hospital, but the people there gave us some cheese sandwiches and so on, and the staff did, and then we left this one fellow and took off. Well, outside the hospital, as I say, you couldn't have arms in there, so I got a haversack full of hand grenades from outside the hospital, and that's about all I could use from then on, as far as I was concerned. But we were sent to several different positions, and I couldn't name one now to save my soul. I just, we get the. We got back, a group of us, and then we're attached to some group, and and this type of thing. And I was pretty mixed up even as far as directions were concerned in that island. I didn't know one hill from another, and so on. Now we realize they all had names, but I didn't know that then. But
so how long did you continue to function as a platoon or a unit, right till this day of surrender, or were you captured before the...
No, till we surrendered, all right, but we didn't function as a platoon because we were split up and attached to other groups. Mm-hmm. But it was when we were, we didn't know about surrender, of course. We were, I guess everybody was working their way up, what do they call it, Jardines? No, not Jardines. The peak, anyway. And we were beating our way back up there and sort of giving overhead fire to each other as we're getting up there. And we got up there and found that it was all over then. You see, that's when we knew that we were finished. But, apparently, I don't know of anybody surrendering except the British governor of the island, as far as I'm concerned. But, because we didn't know anything about surrendering, we didn't know we had a chance to do that.
How did you first find out about that surrender?
Well, we got up there, and there were some grown officers there that told us. Mm-hmm. Now, most of us broke our when we knew it was for a fact, we broke our small arms. And, we took the bolts, for example, of the rifles and threw them away and that type of thing.
When you found out you had to surrender, did you really want to surrender, or were you ready to surrender?
Well, to tell the truth, no, not really. We didn't really know how, what was going. Didn't know how it was going any other place than the spot we were right in. But one thing, when you say ready for surrender, I got to say this, I was ready for sleep. Boy, I was beat. It was just one of those things. I was just dead tired.
How was the food and water during the battle? Did you have lots of that? Or?
No. We didn't. It didn't last long enough for us to do any starving, really. But it was pretty bad. And there are little things that used to bother me quite a bit, like, for example, for a while I had a group alone, and we couldn't get anything from our own, I believe, Red Cross supplies, although there was an officer of the YMCA there that was in charge of these things. Well, he would, apparently wouldn't hand out anything unless it was signed by an officer. Well, our officer was long gone. He was killed the first morning, you see. However, these things happened. Then coming down from that peak, we stopped overnight at some big school or college or some type of place like that for overnight. And I was one of the ones that was taken away from there to this Bowen Road Hospital to have my hand fixed up. So it wasn't too bad there. It wasn't there very long. But our own boys, the Grenadiers, they had gone across to the mainland to the Kowloon side, if I remember rightly, Shamshapole Barracks. And so when I got out of the hospital, they sent me to, with this group, to North Point Camp, and that's where our Eastern unit was from, the Royal Rifles of Canada. And I got down there, they treated me mighty fine, although 90% of them were French-speaking, and so on, but they treated me very nice, very good. But, and it was some time before we even heard. Now, there was more than me of the Winnipeg Grenadiers at this North Point camp, but it was some time before we heard anything about our own regiment that was just across the channel there, you know. But
how about the Japanese? When you surrendered, did you have any ideas about the Japanese, what they'd be like?
And this is something that really kind of worried us, you know, because we didn't have any notion at all. Although after in this North Point camp, there was new guards came in, and the people we had been fighting was sent on to other places. They were trained fighters. And I'm telling you, I'd shake hands with those people I was fighting with 100 times more than I'd. But, you know, I'd be happier too than the guards that were guarding the camps. You know.
They were pretty mean, weren't they?
Well, yeah, I don't know. Somehow you find a good fighting soldier as a gentleman too. Well, you know what I mean. When it's all over, it's over. You know. However, we got together with the Grenadiers again at Shamshapo. Yeah, I guess we went over there. Then back to North Point. Now, I'm trying to get this straightened out which way it happened. But I guess I was on one of the first to, I was on the first group to go to Japan.
Well, back in North Point, how long did you stay in North Point before you were drafted?
No, I don't know. I can't think of how long we were before that first bunch went to Japan.
How was the treatment during that time? Was there much disease or anything like that?
Yes. We had quite a bunch of boys dying off, you know, and things like that. It wasn't good. Well, and besides that, I guess a lot of it was malnutrition, but this beriberi, if you break out in raw sores and so on, sometimes the feet would just be like walking on needles, you know, and so on.
Did you have any of these diseases yourself?
Yes, I had both. My legs are bad yet, but I mean, this other rash type thing we get was really something, but they said that I believe was just lack of vitamin, you know, something like that. But if you break out in scurvy sores, I guess, you know, it'd be something like that. And I, you know.
What was the food like? Was it just mainly rice, or was there?
Yes, like what we got to call vegetable soup or something like that. It wasn't like what we call vegetable soup at all. We're all hungry. As far as I'm concerned, I think I was thinking more of a pork chop than I was of life itself most of the time, you know.
Yeah. Do any of the guards stand out in your mind while you were at North Point camp, or were they all just average guys?
Well, there's just one in Japan that I'd like to get my hands on. Well, maybe more than one, but one that stands out in my mind, you know, because he was, he apparently was born and educated at Kamloops, British Columbia. And I bet your daughters know that. I'd never been through Kamloops, but I ever found him there. He's about the only one I met at, that's all there is to it. But we went to Japan. That was a nasty ride in that boat. We just put down the hold there, you know, and we just sit on the floor with your knees buckled in under you, and that's about all the room you had.
You were on the first draft that you said in Japan?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how long it took you to get there?
No, I don't. No, but it was pretty long to be cramped up the way we were. Mm-hmm. Then we got there.
Do you remember where you landed in Japan, what city it was?
No, because if I remember rightly, we went too far from where we went to work in the shipyards. And that, to me, I think had to be someplace between Tokyo and Yokohama. Mm-hmm. 3D camp is what they called it, and I don't know, I'm sure. Mm-hmm.
You worked in the shipyards, and did you work there?
Yeah, I worked in the shipyards there, and then I had some problems there. And was sent to three times. Sent to a what they called a hospital, a barn, there were no beds in it or anything like that, but it's called the Shinagawa Hospital. And they operated on me there two or three times and so on. But that I guess, was one of the most hardest things on my nerves, because the anesthetic and so on, and as I say, there were no beds, and if you had to go to the head, you just held yourself together and went. That's all there is to it. You know, it's...
Do you remember who your doctor was? Was it a British doctor, or was it Dr. Crawford?
There was one American doctor there, and I've been trying to think of his name, and I can't do it. I believe he was a major, and I can't think of his name for sure. But the Japs themselves, they had played their part in it too. He wasn't, you know, he was the representative. See, there wasn't any of our doctors around where I was at all, or any of our officers, if I put that way, around where at all.
So the Japanese did have medical supplies not available, so.
Well, I'd imagine if they had had them, you know, they'd use some, but they. I think it was just as bad for them as it was for us. Mm-hmm. But as I say, that's one of the things that beat my nerves all to heck, was sometimes when things are pretty painful, you know. You can only take so much of that sort of stuff. But I don't know if I'm over that, all right. And they sent us up north to, I forget the name of the place there too. I think the closest town was called Ohasa or some such place. And we worked in the mines there.
Was this a coal mine? Iron mine?
It would be an iron mine. The strange part of it is, there in those hills, in Canada here, if you're working the 500 foot level, you're 500 foot down. Mm-hmm. Well, there, if you're in the 500 foot level, you're 500 foot up into the mountain. Mm-hmm. But it was quite the. It's right. When it was all over, and some American ships were out to sea and shelling the mainland up north where we were, and we could see them from up from where we were in need. And of course, we had a hunch that it was just about over. But anyway, when we got back to our camp from work, I guess it would be the next morning, we weren't taken to work, and we were called out on the square, and the American officer in charge of us there, he gave us some good advice. He told us, you know, it's all over now. The guards that are around here are around here to protect you. Don't get smart, you know. Or, I don't know how he worded it, but it was very good advice, you know. Just stay put, you know, until we're told what to do. Of course, lots of us couldn't do that. We were sneaking out, having ourselves a little ball once in a while. But,
Had you saw much sign of the Americans before the actual surrender? And when you're in Yokohama, did they come over in planes? Or?
No, I. Yeah. You see Yokohama, that 3D camp, yes. Yes, there was. Quite a bit of the bombing from B-29s, the high stuff, and there was a few times, I guess, I couldn't tell you how often, but the fighter planes came right down over the camps that we were in, and so on, and over the shipyards where we worked.
So you had some idea that the war wasn't going too well for the Japanese?
Well, we had to know there was a task force, carrier someplace, because they were fighter planes. They're small planes. We knew that. Rumors started flying, and all of a sudden we got the Americans taking back those islands one after another, all the way back that they had lost, all the way, you know, and so on. And I guess that's what was happening.
How did you find out that they were taking these islands? Did you have a radio in camp, or did you get news from somebody, or how?
Well, no. Not, I believe somebody had one in Japan. Oh, I don't know, but these rumors would happen. But we had one in Sham-Chapeau, and by the name of Guy Stewart from Pilot Mount. He had that one, and there was Tommy Sinkler from Selkirk, and myself. Oh, there's about four or five of us that was in on, you know, on this deal. Now, mind you, I didn't have anything to do with it, but I mean, we get together and hear some of these broadcasts, and the only thing we ever heard of interest was New Year's Eve. We'd hear Guy Lombardo or some darn thing like that. It wasn't too helpful.
While you were in Japan, did you receive any Red Cross packages or any mail, or did you receive?
Yes, we got. I got three letters, but I believe we got figured out to be almost five Red Cross parcels in the whole time. And that's the single parcels, but it would be one between five or one between three, or this type of thing. And a lot of fun sometimes dividing up a package of raisins between five.
Were the guards in Japan, were they much different than the ones in Hong Kong, or were they about the same? Did they ever change?
Well, no, the guards in Japan where we were working were just stopped at the camp. When we were working, they'd be around, not bother us too much. I got beat up a couple of times. My nose busted and things like that. But we were working under a Japanese foreman, and the guards didn't bother them too much unless they were having, trouble with some of us. Of course, when we got back to our camp at night, that was a different thing. And, well, odd little things happened. Somebody would, when you break into a food storehouse or something like that, and that would call for a big deal as far as they were concerned. They'd line us outside, and it was a bad time.
While you were working in the shipyards and in the mines, did you ever do any little things like sabotage to slow them down, or did anybody ever do any little things on purpose like this to bother?
Oh, yes, there was quite a few things done like that. I made a point of not becoming a diligent worker, if that's what you mean. I didn't turn out any mass production of anything, but some of the boys were in better positions to do things. Like some of our fellows were handling rivet guns and so on. I never handled a rivet gun, but they could ground off the head of a rivet, so even when the inspector drew his hammer down, it wouldn't ring. But I'll bet you when I got out to see something, got to pop someplace. This type of thing. I don't know. As they say, I never handled a gun myself. But, mind you, there wasn't too much, there wasn't any use to get being caught at any sabotage, because the whole camp would go hungry. It's just one of those things.
While you were in Hong Kong and Japan in the camp, did you ever have any form of entertainment, or what did you do to get any spare time?
Well, some of the boys would get together and about three times to my knowledge, and put on little concerts and something like that. But as I say, I think three times. Once in North Point, and once or twice up in that north camp near Ohasa, or whatever they call the place, I forget. But that's all I remember about entertainment. No, we didn't have any. But,
So when the war was over, how did you say you first found out the American planes came over, or did you actually see the American officers?
The first I saw was from the mines where we were working, and we could see, I think it was three or four American ships out to sea, and they just go by and shell and then turn and come back and dropping shells right over this northern place we were at, you see. We could see that. And so it would be the next day that the American officer that was in charge of our camp, anyway, I guess the Japs told him, I guess, and he just called us outside and told us to behave ourselves, and because it was all over, you know.
So it wasn't the Japanese that lined up and said the war was over, it was
no.
The American in the camp?
So. Yeah, it was the American in our camp, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then what was the next sign that we saw the Americans? How long was it before you first saw the first American?
Oh, it wasn't too long after, I couldn't say, but it wasn't too long after that that the American planes came over and dropping food and clothing. Mm-hmm. And boy, they dropped. They did a wonderful job in those valleys. But, you know, mind you, there were quite a few that sure went missing, but they did a good job of dropping it. We got a lot of good bulk foods that way and warm clothing, because we didn't have clothing. We were pretty cold. That country's a cold country in the wintertime, you know. But they dropped the stuff like that. And then eventually, I don't know how long it was after, it was quite some time, because they say I had made several trips to the village myself and this type of thing. Mm-hmm. But,
What village was this? Just a nearby village?
Yeah.
What it was?
Just a nearby village down the road, yeah. Then we'd, some of the boys go out and steal some chickens and so on, and different things like that, and cook them up. But by this, then we started getting stuff from the air, so we didn't need anything like that anymore at all. But we, after that, the Americans came in trucks, with trucks, and loaded us up and took us down to the waterfront, put us aboard this ship, and
was this a medical ship or a hospital ship?
No, it wasn't. We never got any treatment aboard the ship at all. I guess those that were sick, but no, it wasn't like a hospital ship at all.
Did they give you clean clothes and all that?
Yeah, and we threw everything overboard and got into new American fatigues and so on.
Do you remember what city this was on the waterfront that they took you down to?
No, I don't. But we pulled out of there, and I guess the next place was. I better say one thing. Those cooks on board that ship were dandy. This is true, and they'd tell you, go ahead and eat.
They give you anything they want, if you wanted.
Go to the side of the ship, throw it up, come back and get some more. Yeah, this is true. Boy, they fed us real good. But,
well, how many guys were there in your prison camp, do you recall?
Oh, gosh, no. That was a pretty big camp.
Were these all Canadians, or was it mixed with the British?
There was a few at the... it was mostly Canadians. Mm-hmm. There was a few of the Eastern Unit.
This was the Royal Rifles.
The Royal Rifles, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No Scotch or English or East Indian?
No, not in that camp. There was we'd bump into them. We bumped into them both at mostly at Sham Chapeau while we were over there. Mm-hmm. And few, I think, at North Point.
And do you remember where you stopped on the way home once the Americans put you on the ship?
Yes, we got took us to Guam, and of course they had that set up as a hospital, these big H huts, but they were, you know, there was they had it fixed up for hospital purposes, and they looked after us real good there. Fed us good, and of course there was recreation lounge there, and there was some professional entertainment from the United States there, and so on. It was very nice.
How long did you stay there? Did you know, a couple of days?
No, more than a couple of days, but I'd say maybe pretty close to a week. Mm-hmm. Because they were flying most of us from there.
They flew,
and they were trying to get as many as they could on a plane. So they flew flew us from there, or I was one of the flown from there to Hawaii, and was put in hospital there, and not as a bed patient, but that's my quarters. And so the same thing from there, they treated us very good. And I made a broadcast from the Royal Hawaiian Hotel, as a matter of fact. But we, from there, they were trying to fly as many out as they could. And so I was there quite a while, because what they do is get as many names on that plane as they could. And then they'd check for weight, and they'd find it overweight. So what did they do? They scratched the two heavy ones. And I was bloated up like a poison pup. So, oh, it was a long time. Then there was one odd thing, though. There was a press reporter there. Asked if we made this broadcast. There's Ross Peirce from Darlingford, and myself, and another fella. Anyway, if we made this broadcast, she'd do her best to get us out of there. And sure enough, we made the broadcast, and we flew from Hawaii then to San Francisco on one of these big flying ships, you know. And the crazy part of it was there were just us on it, besides the pilot, co-pilot, and the officer in charge of the ship. Mm-hmm. But
so you went to San Francisco then, where you stopped. How long, do you remember how long you were in San Francisco?
Yeah, I was there too long, too, because they waited until I had, I think it was 50 or a certain figure to come by train. We were on Angel Island, and to come by train to, well, I guess it would be Seattle, and then across to Victoria. Mm-hmm. So I was there quite a while before they got this 50 together, you know, it was all going the same way.
How were you treated by the Americans while you were there? Did you have any money to spend? Or?
Well, yes, but I mean, didn't really need it. They were wonderful. They were wonderful to us. And but while we're in San Francisco, there was a Canadian paymaster came, and if I remember rightly how it worked, now he'd just give you $20 at a time. But I guess he saw me about every fourth man down the line. I was getting $20 each time. I had to sign for it, mind you. Mm-hmm. But you know, I just felt so nice to have money again. And then we'd get on the launch and over to San Francisco for the evening, mm-hmm. and so on. But even in San Francisco, pocket full of money and. Didn't really need it. Not at all. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because when they spot us, first of all, they wonder what we wear, because we possibly have a Navy fatigue shirt and Army fatigue pants and English running shoes, or tennis shoes as they call them, and no hat on. We had to look like something.
Do you remember what you weighed when you got out of camp and what you weighed at this time?
I weighed 193 when I was taken prisoner, I know that. Mm-hmm. I know I weighed 131 in prison camp. And I know I weighed 228 when I got home. Boy, I was really round. Yeah.
So how long did you stay in Vancouver before you took the train back? You took the train to Vancouver?
Yes, but that was only a few days, very few days.
Mm-hmm. Was there many on the train coming back besides you?
Well, I guess there'd be this about, near as I can remember, there was pretty well, there was about a passenger car, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be about the same amount as what came from San Francisco north to Seattle, you know, pretty well the same group.
Mm-hmm. What was the reception like at the station? Were there a lot of people around, or just...
Oh, yes. And, we were coming from the west, and so... my wife got on the train right here at Portage and came on into Winnipeg. My wife and my sister, and of course, they had things arranged when we got to, you know, in Winnipeg.
And so once you got back, now after you got home, Did your 3.5 years in the prison, has that affected you in your life since the prison?
Well, it hasn't. Like, for example, I, as I said, told you before, I was in the regular army from the time I was quite young until war was declared, and then to meet the labor force in Civvy Street after you get out, they don't want any machine gun instructors, so that's all I knew. You know, this type of thing, so.
No, I was thinking more like physical.
Oh, yeah. Like, for example, I eventually got a job as a letter carrier in town, but that was a few years after war, because Fort Porter got letter carrier service. But I lasted over 2 years on it, but my legs just wouldn't. They've gone on me, that's all.
How about anything else, like your circulation or
yes,
arthritis or anything like that?
I've got arthritis in the shoulder and hip. So yeah, and very, very leg part of it. But I think one of my biggest problems is nerves. My nerves shot all to heck.
How about the Canadian government? Do you feel they've treated you fairly since 1945, or what do you think about the government?
I kind of feel they have now, but I walk the streets of this town looking for a job. No way could I, you know, and so on. This is my home. I had no other place to go. And no money, and there certainly wasn't any. There wasn't any jobs, eventually, I think they gave me $7.50 a month pension or something, and then called me in for a checkup and came home and pretty happy about the whole deal. It turned out to be $15.30 a month or something like that. But as I say now, they've, then they got around to trying to find a suitable employment and so on. Mm-hmm. The pension we have now, of course, 50%, you can't maintain a home on it or anything like that, but nevertheless, it enables me, for example, to work every day on a low-paid job. You know my job, you were out there yesterday, and you sure don't get rich on that job, but...
Have you had many jobs since 1945?
No, I got the job at the post office as letter carrier, and I couldn't, my legs wouldn't take that. Mm-hmm. And then I was worked at the armories, but that was just seasonal. I was a seasonal fireman at the drill hall and the armories, just for, I'd get eight months of the winter. And then in the summer I'd do anything at all, you know, find some work, ride a tractor for a farmer, or, you know, whatever it might be.
Just to sum up, do you have what are your feelings towards the Japanese people today?
They don't bother me. There's quite a number of them around here, you know, and so on. I have vegetable gardens around here. No, they don't.
So you hold no grudge against?
Not really.
Any of the guards, even that you?
No.
Other than the one you mentioned?
No, I think that anything that could rile most of us up was the fact that they didn't know any better. In one way, another way, they couldn't get it. The Japs over there couldn't get it through their heads what we were doing halfway around the world trying to. You know, trying to kill them, and I can see their point, because the people themselves, they didn't know any more what it was about than what I did, and I didn't know. You know what I mean? Just one of those things.
And just as a final question, what are your thoughts about war? Do you think it's a necessary thing, or what do you think about war nowadays? Or?
Well, that's a tough one, because right now, I do think there has to be a show of strength someplace. You know, I honestly think the Western Hemisphere has got to show a very strong show of strength, or we just won't have our way of living. That's all there is to it. And, no, I'm definitely against war. I want to hurt no one, I want no one to hurt me, but the fact is that, yes, I would bear arms again in a minute if it's my home that's being invaded, you know. But I'm damned if I'll go across the ocean to fight for a flight to somebody else's country. You know, it's just one of those things. So.
Okay.